Hello. So
Yeah,
everyone
yeah,
can.
yeah.
Okay. So there are about 30 to 40 people from different parts of US and the world in this conference call. And on behalf of everyone, I, Satya, would like to welcome all the generalists, and we would like to thank everyone to take time out and attend this conference call. I would like to introduce ourselves and the organization which made it possible for this conference call to happen. Rakshak was initially started by Bhavani Ramamurthy, a lady activist who had to go, who had to suffer with the 498A misuse because her sister-in-law in India filed a 498A when she went to India to attend her mother-in-law's funeral. She then had to stay in judicial custody for 7 days, went through a lot of harassment. She came back to United States, where that's where she lives, and she started this organization named Rakshak. Rakshak works with a lot of other sister organizations in India as well as in the US. One of the organizations Rakshak works is, with is 498A.org. It has a big presence on the internet, and it is funded and supported by volunteers. In last 10 months of the existence of 498A.org and Rakshak, they have been contacted by about little over 350 NRI families who have largely complained about a false 498A used against them to harass them or extort money in different ways, or 498A was used as a dominance tool in order to get whatever the bride wanted to get done through the NRI husbands. About a little over 150 cases out of 350 cases have been from the United States itself. With this introduction, I would like to actually go over the people in the forum, and I would like them to introduce themselves to the people or generalists in New Delhi. Why don't people from East Coast, like New York and New Jersey area, introduce themselves?
Hey Satya, before we start, just a question. Do you know who's on the other end in terms of the journalist?
Yeah, let me ask, Anupma, are you able to listen, or everyone over there is able to listen to what we are saying?
Can you hear? Yes, they say they can hear.
Okay. And if anyone at any time have a question, please feel free to interrupt, and we would be able to provide you more explanation if you need. Okay, so people from East Coast, that is New Jersey, New York area, can you actually introduce yourself by the name and which city you are from?
Hi, this is Uma from Stony Brook, New York.
Hi, this is Sher from New Jersey.
Hi, this is Raj from New Jersey.
Hi, this is Amit from Boston.
Hi, this is Naveen from Florida.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, this is Jeetu from New York.
Yeah, hi, this is Raghvendra from New York.
Hi, this is Bhaskar from Connecticut.
Okay, then let's go over the Midwest people. Anyone from Midwest?
Bala from Michigan.
JK from
Santa from Ohio.
Agira from Chicago.
Hi, this is Andrew Choudhury from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah, Anupma, you had a question?
Right, Satya, we can hear, and welcome to all of you, and thank you for joining us. What I would say is they can go ahead with their stories, and at any point in time, if the journalists have a question to pose, then we'll interrupt.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, we wanted to actually tell generalists what are the people and where in the US they are from, and I think it will take another minute of the introduction, and then we'll go over the points everyone wants to make. Okay.
Go ahead.
So people from...
counterpart here in Chicago. I'm a journalist from TV Asia. I'm the Midwest Bureau Chief, and I am seeing what all is happening, so I'm just being with them.
Thank you, Vandana. Then people from West Coast region, can they introduce themselves?
Hi, this is Raj.
Sorry.
Hi, this is Rajneesh from San Francisco, California.
Hi, this is Chris from San Francisco, California.
Deepak from San Francisco, California.
Hi, this is Chirag from Santa Clara, California.
Hi, this is Andy
from San Jose.
From
San Jose, California.
Hi, this is Andy from San Jose.
This is Ravi from Los Angeles, California.
And finally, this is Satya from San Jose, California. If anyone...
Dave from San Jose.
This is Rajesh from Birmingham, Alabama.
This is Sumit from San Francisco, California.
This is Karthik from Tennessee.
This is Rams from Phoenix, Arizona.
My brother is in Houston, Texas.
Okay. So I will go forward. Thanks everyone for introducing themselves. Yeah. Okay. So Vandana, would you like to start and tell about your the issues and the things you discussed with the minister of MOIA when he was here for the talk?
Hi, folks. Nice talking to you guys, actually. I have left India almost 14, 15 years ago, and India was not like the way it is now. I've seen the changing colors, and I first of all want to salute my community at the other end, 10,000 miles away, those who have taken the lead to come up and show what the true colors of hypocrisy is, to be honest. What I feel, these guys, those who are here, most of them are coming here on an immigration visa. They are not on immigration visa. They came on H-1 here. They get married in India. The marriage is registered in India. And the U.S. government is accepting their marriages, which was registered in India. And that marriage is Indian registration, the Indian system. So their wives or the spouses get to come to U.S. to enjoy the glamour. In the counterpart here, when they go through the troubles, so we get divorced here, and that divorce is not accepted by the government of India. Divorce has to be in India, and it has to be registered. When U.S. government accepts the Indian marriages, why the Indian government doesn't accept the U.S. divorces? Height of hypocrisy. And I met Mr. your minister, what is his name, so-called the new ministry, Ravi. Here, yeah, I mean, due respect to his name. He was here in Chicago, June or July. I asked him, I'm listening all these things, what all is happening. He said, oh, no, we should not talk this. I said, you were the first woman who's talking to me that men get abused by women. I said, what? I hope our government is not seeing all these things. And then he comes to me. He said, we can talk these things in private. Means we should not talk in public. I said, I'm sorry. I'm living in this country. We talk everything in public. I'm public. You are public. You have to answer to me right on my camera. You cannot just answer what you want, like I can talk to you. He said, there'll be women wing. They will be coming for demonstration, whatever he will be talking right on my door. I said, what about the demonstration from the men wing? He told me there was a gathering of 104 people. Out of that, only 4 women, including me. He said, you are the first female I've come across who is telling me that the men get abused by women. And I got a round of applause, I don't know. So that is what I wanted to start. Now you guys can carry on.
Thank you, Vanna. Thanks for the introduction. So I would like to actually go over different problems which NRI husbands and their families have been going through because of the crooked and one-sided gender bias laws implemented by the Indian government at various times. And most of the people on this call, I would say 95% or more, have 498A either registered against them, that is the dowry abuse law, or they are in that stage in which they have been negotiating, or the parents of the bride have been negotiating about the money they want to charge in order to take away the case that they have filed. Both the parties know the case is false. Now, I would like to come out with this very important and I would say recent issue or phenomena about issuing the red corner Interpol notices against the NRI husbands and thus equating them to the level of international wanted terrorists like Dawood Ibrahim. I think KK from California has more to add there.
Hi, folks. This is KK from California. I've just done a little bit of research on the Interpol red notices. I kept hearing from people that, you know, we're subject of red Interpol red notices. The basic purpose of a red corner notice is issued by Interpol is telling the member countries of the Interpol to arrest this dangerous criminal who is the subject of this red corner notice and place him in extradition proceedings. So this is basically used for fugitives from law, particularly people who are involved in drug trafficking, terrorist activities, or you know, murderers, and you know, that cadre of you know, criminals. So you know, what caught my attention really was an article in a South Indian newspaper called Deccan Chronicle, in which this gentleman called Umapati is a CID Deputy Inspector General. Apparently, he was completely blatant about you know what is what they are using this Interpol red corner notices for. He says the headline in the newspaper says Interpol aids AP husband hunt, as if that is the main reason why the Interpol is existing, and he was very proud of. Announcing that the Andhra Pradesh police has issued 300 red corner notices to catch hold of the crooked husbands, whereas throughout the whole of India, they have issued only a handful of red corner notices for serious crimes like murder and terrorism. So he was admitting himself that, you know, for serious crimes, only a handful of red corner notices are issued, but for marital disputes involving man and woman, they have issued about 300 red corner notices, completely criminalizing petty marital disputes, right? So in the same article, this gentleman also says, once the red corner notice is issued, the NRI quickly patches up with his in-laws. That's the statement he made, implying that, you know, once the red corner notice is issued, the NRI quickly comes to settlement terms with his in-laws, basically coughing up whatever blackmail extortion sum they are demanding for. So, you know, this is a complete, utter, misuse or flagrant violation of the policies of Interpol and also use of the Interpol red corner notices. The only catch is, does the Interpol really know what this 498A really is about? You know, if they really know the contents of the law, and the reason why these red corner notices are issued against honest, law-abiding citizens who are prepared to fight these cases if the process is due and fair, and you know, if they are given the opportunity to defend themselves. In many of these cases, the actual alleged incidents are supposed to have occurred in a different jurisdiction than in India. If the crime has occurred in California, as per the lady, how can this gentleman prove in India, some corner village of India, that crime did not occur as she is alleging in California? How can he produce his witnesses?
Yeah, KK, thanks for the introduction about the red corner notices. We have Naveen from Florida who has to add something about it because he's going through that trouble right now as we speak. Naveen, would you like to tell your story?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, hi, everyone. This is Naveen from Florida. So I have been listed on this Interpol with the red color notice. I don't know the exact reason how it followed on that one. So even though the case is filed and the arrest warrant is there, yeah, the case against my parents and family has been already been dismissed by the district court in one of the districts in the Andhra Pradesh. But still, no update on the Interpol notice. And even before also, there was no investigation which says that whatever their allegations are proven. No investigation, nothing has been proved. So how can the Interpol just give an red card notice without any proper investigation, no proof, nothing?
Okay.
Seth, can I just interject here 1 minute?
Sure.
You know, the Indian government, this is Raj, the Indian government intends to issue red corner notices against NRIs based on mirror allegations. Yet, they are unwilling, the Indian government is unwilling to honor red corner notices not based on mirror allegations, based on findings that are issued by the American legal system. So, I mean, this is pure hypocrisy on behalf of the Indian government.
All right.
There have been instances where red corner notices have been issued by the United States against U.S. citizens who have run to India, who are hiding in India for crimes committed in the U.S. Even those red corner notices are being ignored by the U.S., by the Indian government.
Thanks for your comments. I would like to just draw a parallel over here. Everyone knows that 498A can be registered on a mere complaint by the wife without any proof. It is very important for us, all of us, to understand that this is a criminal case that can be registered just on the oral complaint by the wife without any proof. It would be something like if you allegate a minister in the parliament saying that he took a bribe, and just on that you arrest a minister in the parliament and then you try to extradite him outside of India because there is a criminal case against him. So any questions from the our counterpart, our people in Delhi right now? Before we move on to the next topic? Anupma?
Yeah, Satya?
Do they have any questions about red corner notices? Do they understand the gravity of this problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just one question that I have.
Yeah.
That once a red corner notice is issued, you said that if a settlement is accorded, then the red corner, what happens to the red corner notice? Is that quashed automatically?
Anupama, this is KK here. What happens is the Ministry of External Affairs has to communicate to the Interpol that the person is no longer required or is already in custody, and only then the Interpol would remove the red corner notice. Mm-hmm. So the red corner notice can be removed by any time, provided the Ministry of External Affairs, who actually requested the red corner notice from Interpol, asks it to be removed.
And we all know how slow and how bureaucratic these procedures are, and it may take years for actual notice to get removed after the judgment has come that the person is innocent.
Right. Is there any questions that you would like to ask?
This is Naveen from Florida again. Just I want to add one more thing. The funny thing is, some of these girls file these false 498 cases in India and then fly back to U.S., like what happened exactly in my case. So she filed the case and came back to U.S., and I am facing this red corner notice, and she's enjoying her life in U.S.
You should file a racketeering charges against her.
Yeah, we will we'll go into the suggestions later. Thank you. It is very important. It's a very important issue raised by Naveen from Florida, that these women, they are using the laws in India to show that they were beaten or harassed at some point of time in their marriage in the foreign country. They go to India, they file their case, they make use of the Indian legal system, then they come back to US and they start enjoying their life, while the parents and extended family of the NRI goes to the trouble of trying to prove themselves innocent. And since this is a criminal case and it's against the state, she does not have to even appear in the court to prove her allegations.
And in fact,
NRI group. NRI group.
Yes.
Any questions that you would like to ask them about red corner notices? That is about the ministry issuing red corner notices against. And this is only on based on an allegation. No trial has been held. No guilt has been proven. Just based on the fact that one woman walks into a police station and alleges a crime has been committed, where Interpol is alerted and a red corner notice is issued by the government of India. How fair is that? So basically, this law works in reverse. First, you pronounce the person guilty and you go ahead and punish him, and subsequently will come the a trial and finding out whether or not he deserved it in the first place.
And one point I would like to add at this juncture is...
Yeah, sir, someone's asking you a question, please.
Sure.
I want to ask, what is the social stigma in ULAB in the US, and I read that corner notice has been issued against you. What is the social stigma in your fraternity over there?
Sure. Thanks for asking this question. It's very relevant. The people in Western country know what is the importance of a red corner notice. They know that the red corner notice is very rare and is issued for people like Osama bin Laden or people of that nature who are international terrorists and have been requested or are actually sought after from many countries. So if they know that there is a person working in their office who has a red corner notice against him, they would not like to go into details about what kind of a 498A and dowry law and all that. They would think that this guy must be a real hardcore criminal. Okay?
Or a terrorist.
A terrorist. And they would basically... And do you think any company would like to keep an employee who has a red corner notice against him? Think about that. That Infosys or any company, Wipro, Satyam, any government employee, if he or she has a red corner notice against him, would any company in India would actually allow that? Now, can you believe? Now, think about this and draw a parallel. In India, if you are a government servant, a government employee, and you spend one night in jail, you are suspended from your job.
Is it possible?
Okay. But, and one night in jail is nothing compared to a red corner notice. Now you can understand that what is the social stigma we are talking about here.
Satya, let the woman also speak.
Yes.
Go ahead. Hello?
Yeah,
we are. So, one point I would like to add at this stage, people mentioned... Hello, can anybody hear me?
Yes. I want to go ahead and again.
At this juncture, I would like to mention that one of the reasons why a lot of women actually go back to India and file cases is because in the US, if you file false cases and later it's proven to be false, then there's a penalty of perjury for which the punishment is really harsh. While in the Indian judicial system, the penalty for perjury, practically speaking, is non-existent.
It's 300 rupees.
Oh, okay.
Especially in these so-called matrimonial cases.
I'd just like to add here that, in fact, there is a punishment for perjury in India as well, but so far that has never been invoked in any of the cases, even in cases where it's been proved at the end of it, or the girl herself has said that, yes, it was a false case and I only did it for money. She's never been punished, and the clause of perjury has never been invoked. So you can understand, here you have a law in which one person is stigmatized and his entire family suffers hardship even before he actually undergoes a trial. At the end of the trial, which may drag on for years and years, they finally find out, okay, he's not guilty.
And the person who lied and who brought about all this is again allowed to go scot-free. So this law is completely absurd, and that's exactly what we're trying to say. And the NRIs, of course, you can see for several reasons, are top targets here. That's not to say that people in India are not suffering too, but they just are suffering much, much more because of these kind of things.
And this has destroyed a lot of promising careers. I know a guy in Google who was actually implicated in a false 498A case, and he ended up paying 25 lakhs. You know, I have friends who are in Yahoo, Microsoft, Adobe, in very good companies, people from IITs who have actually spent, worked very hard and actually reached at some stage in their life, and the wives just exploit them and extort money from them, you know, for their own selfish reasons, and there is no punishment for them, and the promising guy's career is totally destroyed.
I want to add something.
Andy, can they name
Satya,
the person?
Go ahead. Satya, I want to add something.
Sure, Vandana, go ahead.
This is regarding the booklet, thanks to the Government of India Ministry, why they have not added, because actually now we are in U.S. almost getting to third generation of Indian origin. So I don't think so that the guys who come here with a promising IITs or engineering college, they don't need to go back to India to get a bride, you know, because we don't need to import anyone from India, get her like, oh, means to a privileged country. There are so many available. At least I would suggest the guys now here living in U.S. who come here, they should marry the girls from within here.
No,
there will be no problems, actually.
Okay, guys.
Can we now concentrate on our list?
Yes, okay. Yes. Let's go to the next point, guys. Nice points put forward by a lot of people. Now, the next...
I think there's one more question, if you could just take that.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Anupma, we cannot hear question. Can you repeat the question from the lady?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so there are a lot of things we would like to get changed, and I would we will go over it after we go through our list of points we wanted to mention, because there are a lot of points, and we would actually not like to spark another debate right now before we go through the list, and then we can take up this question, because this is very the ambit of this question is very wide.
Okay, Satya, I have a few points, and you can just check by me if that's correct or not.
Okay.
Basically, what I think we would like from NRI-related concerns is, one is that every person, you know, based on whichever country he's living on, he is bound by the laws of that country. Okay, every country has different laws and different circumstances. Now, if a person, a woman claims that she is being tortured in, say, the United States of America,
yeah,
she has every right to go to the police or to the judiciary or to the powers that be in that very country, because the jurisdiction allows for it to. There is no need for her to run to India and to try and use the legal loopholes in India, which is exactly how we see it. So basically, we want that 498A or 406 should not be allowed to be filed in India if the husband and wife do not reside in India. They should be bound by the laws of the country that they reside in. That is one. Is that correct, Satya? Do you agree?
I agree with that. Actually, the least the judiciary should do before registering a case of 498A against a husband who is outside the India, to see if the woman tried, even, you know, tried to register a case in the country she was living in before she came, ran to India to file a 498A. Because she should show that there was no means available for her, and her intention, she tried to reach the police and police did not help her out. I would like to mention over here that almost every country, every developed country in the world where you would see the maximum concentration of NRIs, which is Europe, Canada, US, and Australia, all these countries have very stringent laws against of violence against women. So there is no point, or there is no way the woman could not get a better help she would get in India.
So another point I would like to mention at this point is that just because somebody alleges dowry harassment or violence against them, the passports of any NRI should not be impounded. What happens is once a false 498A case is registered against them, then NRIs do not want to go back to India because they're harassed for money by police and by lawyers and all that stuff. And so since they're not willing to go back to India because they might get stuck there, they might lose their job, they might lose their means of livelihood, so they do not return back to India. And then they're, I'm sorry, go ahead.
There should be no unnecessary harassment in procuring anticipatory bail, such as impounding of passports, because that discourages NRIs from joining investigations.
Right.
And effectively, it smothers their voice,
Yeah.
If they cannot travel to India, if they cannot state their case, if they cannot fight their case, then how are they supposed to prove their innocence?
Yeah, so it's a catch-22 position. It's a catch-22 position for NRIs because they cannot go back to India because they fear getting stuck there eternally. And if they don't go there, they're declared public offenders, which are basically, criminals in the eyes of law in India. So,
In fact, there are examples of people who are willing to stay back in India and fight the case. Of course, for lack of choice. For example, my brother's spouse.
Can you identify? Yeah, go ahead. Can you identify your name and the location?
Satya, name and the location is important, and the person speaking, and let the woman speak first, please.
Yeah. So, Uma, go ahead.
Hello, Uma. I think she's making it tough. Hang on a second, guys.
Yeah.
Okay, I can. Let me.
Okay. Hold on, guys.
His passport was impounded. All right. And when he tried to get out, when he tried to apply for bail, they asked him for like 22 lakhs or something to put place there as a surety, and he couldn't do that. So he lost his citizenship here, and he ended up staying back in India.
Okay, guys, we'll take just a 10-second break. Okay.